Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Frank Bateman, the Health and Human Services Department's Chief Information Officer. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on the program.
I'm glad to be here, Jason.
The thought process behind this show and having you back on, I think about 6 months ago you were on, is you testified before a Senate hearing on IT duplication, and you said some actually really interesting things in your testimony and as well as during the hearing itself. And I wanted to follow up with you on a couple things. The first one that you talked about was the hire to retire program. And I thought this was a fascinating program the way you described it. So give us a little bit of background. What is the program? What is its goals?
It's actually quite interesting. So when you look out at over a large federated agency like HHS, it turns out that there are lots of HR systems. And we took a look at our need to upgrade PeopleSoft last year and looked at our various options. And we came to the conclusion that our best approach would be, in fact, to consolidate those various systems across the department and outsource them, because effectively it's a commodity activity, HR. We're not the world experts in running HR systems, but there are people out there who do a particularly good job of this. So we decided to upgrade by outsourcing to the National Finance Center, which is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Now, this move to the NFC is very interesting. This is part of the shared services approach that the OMB has been really pushing for, not just this administration, but the last administration. What made you choose the National Finance Center? Did you go through a solicitation, if you will, or did they just make sense based on maybe payroll or other things?
We went through an exhaustive review of what our options were at the possibility of actually upgrading our HR systems internally and consolidating them. We looked at going to a private company to outsource it to, and we looked at federal shared service centers. And the NFC rose as the best option for us because it was an opportunity to do this hire to retire approach that we're taking, which is consolidating core HR systems, payroll, and time and leave functions into one system, one provider, so that it's all integrated in the end.
Currently, those systems, I think core HR, payroll, time and leave functions, they're all separate systems that are all kind of end of life. And then to people, for instance, if you go in today and say, okay, I have to, it's going to put my payroll in for the week, you put that in manually, or is it online, but somebody else down the road in your CFO's office has to kind of bring it all together? Give me the sense of what the current state of your HR systems is now.
So what we have right now, I guess, is best described as maybe a fragmented hodgepodge of systems. So depending on where you are in the department, you may be using one time and leave system, a different payroll system, and a different HR system than another operating division in the department. So this was an opportunity for all of us to move to one single authoritative system of record and use that complete hire to retire, those three systems together. And the key thing is, not only was it going to save us money and allow us to upgrade and get modern features that we had been lacking, but we will now have that single authoritative system of record so that the secretary can look out at the department and say, on this day, at this time, this is how many employees I have.
And that's important because obviously as budgets tighten, as things change up, having that data, you know, we keep hearing it's all about the data, but having that data becomes even more important to make decisions.
That's exactly right. And we didn't have that. So we're going to be in a much better place next year as this migration continues.
And let's talk about the migration. I remember when we spoke in November, you guys were just at the beginnings of this program. You talked about moving systems to the cloud, turning off legacy systems. Give me a sense of where you're at with everything, and when do you think this migration actually will be completed?
Right now, I guess I'd say we're sort of in the project design phase. Over the last 6 months, we have received conditional approval from OPM and OMB on our business case. We've completed our first major milestone review, and we've gotten buy-in from stakeholders across the department. and we've agreed upon a deployment and transition schedule. We've just completed our fit gap analysis so that we can take all the existing systems and say, this is what they provide, and these are the things that will be lacking and need to be adjusted in the migration. As far as completing the migration, our current schedule is that it'll be completed by February 2015 with the first operating divisions in the department rolling over in less than a year from now.
All right, so you've got a lot to do over that short amount of time. Is the biggest challenge you're seeing is the data issue? Because systems are systems, but moving the data from one legacy system to the new system, is that really the biggest challenge?
It actually is, believe it or not. We have spent a lot of time over the past 6 months cleaning up our data to make it easier to move to a new system. If we have good data, the move is going to go much more smoothly.
How did you go about cleaning up the data? Did you actually have to go in and say, you know, make sure you crosswalked it, or did you just have to standardize it? What were some of the steps?
Believe it or not, it was a relatively manual effort. We've had a group of really dedicated employees in the office of the CIO who've been working that, going through, looking for anomalies, and making sure everything is consistent standard.
That's such a tough job, I've heard before. When you say manually, were you also using some tools to say, let's make sure that when we call, you know, payroll is defined as payroll is defined as payroll, or is that still done by somebody looking at it and going, okay, that definition in this system and that definition in this system, or the drop-down menu or whatever it is, they're equal?
I think the easy thing to do is to look at rules that are different system to system and come up with a global replace. The difficult thing is when you need to look at individual records and say, this one is an anomaly and doesn't seem to transfer. So that becomes a manual effort when you look at an individual's record and say, something is awry here, we need to fix it.
The other piece of this is the business process reengineering piece. Now, that may be being done by the HR world, but there's always a tech angle to it. Are you guys looking at your business processes and saying, we got to change the way we do that because we can't, you know, make the round peg fit in the square holes, the common refrain we hear?
Part of the issue here is, as I talked about the fit gap analysis before, we need to be aware that part of our business processes simply can't work in the new system. We need to have standard business processes across the department. To the extent that we can, we're going to make the new system fit our business processes, but some of them just don't make sense any longer. And that's where we need to come up with common practices across the department that allow us to use a standard COTS system, in effect.
Are you worried that, you know, what you just said was kind of interesting to me, because you said we're going to try to make the system fit our business processes to some extent, and then where it doesn't make sense, we're not going to force it in. Are you worried that by taking that angle versus saying we're going to change our business processes to fit the system, you're putting yourself into a little bit more risk?
No, I don't think so. I think that there are certain things that we need the system to do to work for the various parts of HHS. That being said, to the extent that we can get away from anything customized, we're going to do that.
How customized are you now comparably? Are you able to make a comparison?
We have different systems across the various operating divisions, and like any business, over time, it will continue to diverge. So those systems have, over years and years, diverged to meet the business needs of each operating division, and what we're doing right now is looking for an opportunity to unify them wherever it makes sense and to come as close to a standard COTS solution as we can and avoid those customizations, because those customizations are going to be costly and they become recurring costs year over year. Every time the vendor changes the software, we'll need to make changes, and we want to try and avoid that.
Absolutely, because that's where all the costs start to, as you said, go up, up, and up. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get in some of the other priorities, some of the things you guys are working on. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Frank Bateman, the Department of Health and Human Services Chief Information Officer.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Frank Bateman, the Department of Health and Human Services Chief Information Officer. Now, Frank, before break, we're talking a lot about your hire to retire program, moving your core HR systems, some other systems, to a shared service provider, USDA's National Finance Center. One thing, the question that always comes up is cost savings and legacy systems that are being turned off. What do you estimate that that's going to happen, and obviously when?
To make the case for moving to a shared service provider, we obviously need to build a business case, which we did. And our business case said that, conservatively, we expect to save $6 million a year in annual savings. We think that it could go to be more than that as we look for other systems that are connected to HR that we can either modernize or, in fact, shutter. But at a minimum, we expect that we're going to be able to sunset 10 systems and save $6 million a year. And that certainly is a strong business case for doing this.
And from a timing standpoint on those sunsetting of 10 systems, because that's the key here, you know, you could move to a shared service provider, but if your legacy systems, you can never turn them off, you're only getting half the benefit. Do you foresee that at that 2015 full implementation, or maybe later on in 2015, because you got to make sure all the data has been moved and all the migrations work and all that important stuff?
If you don't shut down the existing systems, all you're doing is adding more costly systems to the mix. So we expect to sunset those systems within a few months of the migration being completed. There may be data that we still need to check and use those existing systems, but unless we turn those systems off, we won't see the economic benefit.
And I think that's the key. I mean, that's the last mile, right? The final 20%.
That's right.
So
a lot of people are wedded to those current systems, so we need to make them comfortable that the new systems are going to give them the information they need.
Oh, don't make me go down the path of change management. We're going to talk about that maybe next year when we do another one of these interviews, once you've had some time to do that change management piece. But that's always the hardest one, right?
It most certainly is. Technology is the easy part.
There you go. PortfolioStat played a big role in helping you guys make this decision. We hear a lot about OMB and the push for PortfolioStat. You know, version 2 is out now. Give me a sense of how you guys used PortfolioStat to come to the decision that the hire to retire program was not only necessary, but something that could be done.
We looked out across those common systems that the department runs, and we said, where are there opportunities? And we were already heading down the path of saying, you know what, the HR system that we're using is end of life, so we need to do something about it regardless. So PortfolioStat helped us highlight places where we have challenges in gathering information across the department. It helped us bring together that information in a common, measurable way. And it became an exercise that allowed us to prioritize, among other things, hire to retire as being one of those things we were going to focus on early on.
Now, in the PortfolioStat session, OMB likes to say, well, it's got to be not just the IT folks or the program folks, but it's got to be the CFO, the Chief Human Capital Officer folks, the Chief Acquisition Officer folks. Who did you have in your PortfolioStat session? Can you give me a sense, did it last for one day, a couple hours? Was it a week long? You know, you all bought, you know, lots of coffee and slept in your clothes. Give me a sense of how that session went.
Well, PortfolioStat is a process that culminates in a meeting with folks from the White House led by Steve Van Roekel. From the initial data call up until that actual meeting occurred, a lot of information passed back and forth between HHS and its operating divisions and then back over to OMB to make sure that we were able to get the information that OMB was looking for, but also do it in a common way that allowed us to look across the board and say, these are the same items we're looking at across HHS. That simplified the data collection process for this year because we went through it last year. As I said, it culminated in a meeting, and that meeting was at the deputy secretary level at HHS. The chief of staff for HHS was there, the CFO, the chief acquisition officer, the chief human capital officer. Good governance in IT isn't IT folks talking to IT folks. It's all about the entire business looking at the strategic investment you're making in IT and how effectively that's helping you to accomplish your business missions.
Now, did you have anybody who was like, well, I don't know about this. I don't know if we should, you know, get rid of our HR system? Or was there basically pretty good agreement because everyone recognized time had come?
Well, I think everyone agreed that we needed to make a change. The question was, what's the right direction? And as I said, we went through thorough analysis looking at all the alternatives. And I think by the time we got to the end of that analysis, not everyone was jumping up and down shouting, this is the right direction, but they were comfortable with the direction. And I am hopeful, we're putting a lot of energy and thought into this, that by the end, we're going to make everyone in the department very happy that the change that we're making right now is going to result in better data, and we're going to be able to do it at less cost.
And that's key. I mean, those two things, you got to make not just your constituents, your customers happy, but also you got to manage up and manage down in many respects. And you got to show them that, hey, it's not just, you know, we're not moving for moving's sake, but here's the benefits you'll get. And that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle is explaining and presenting the real benefits.
That's exactly right. I think one of the things we often forget in the IT community is that our business is really customer service, and the technology is a means towards providing great customer service. But if our customers are getting what they need, then we should be pretty satisfied that we're doing a good job.
Well, I think one of the other issues that you guys have just started down the path on around cloud computing is also about customer service. Recently, HHS kind of set the tone for around FedRAMP, the cloud security standard process, by approving Amazon and their cloud services as the first agency to say, here's a vendor who met the FedRAMP standards. Give me a sense of that process. How'd you get through it? Because it was the first and it was new, and there's probably a lot of agencies who are calling you up now saying, hey, let me get those documents. Let me see what you did. How did you go through it? So give me a sense of that path that you went down, and why did you decide to go down that path specifically?
We had Amazon providing services throughout the department. So there was already a relationship with Amazon. So it made sense to double down and get that ATO completed. My role was really easy in this. My role was simply issuing the ATO and providing executive support to the project. But what was most impressive was the team that we had, and they worked diligently, long hours, and very thoughtfully, bringing together folks from throughout HHS, because the various missions all have different security requirements throughout HHS. So we had folks serving on the team to develop that ATO from all across the department, from Centers for Disease Control, Food and Drug Administration, National Institutes of Health, ACF, Office of the Secretary, all participating in a cross-functional security team. And that way, we understood all the various security requirements that we had across HHS, and that made the process work all that much better.
How long did it take? Because I think other agencies who maybe are going to go down a similar path, maybe not with Amazon because they could use your documents, but maybe with other companies, was this a six-month, was this a year-long process? And was there some challenges that you saw that you had heard about from your cross-agency security team that, well, you know, at one point going, oh, I don't know if we're going to get through this or not? Was there anything that stood out to you?
The process was challenging in large measure because it had never been done before and because it required a sustained cross-agency effort, both within HHS as well as partnering with GSA to make it happen. But building and maintaining those relationships was key to our success. And people were just focused on the outcome. They wanted to make this happen. And we all knew that there needed to be a FedRAMP-approved ATO. We were all heading in that direction. So there was a lot of willingness across the government to figure out how we're going to get this done. And as you point out, we helped to do some groundbreaking work there, but we're sharing all of those experiences with other federal agencies. We've had a number of them coming knocking on our door to partner with us as they decide which cloud providers they want to bring through and get our advice on how how to make it happen. And we're taking our lessons learned and looking at other vendors that we already do business with in HHS and bring them through FedRAMP ATOs as well.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the cloud. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Frank Bateman, the Department of Health and Human Services Chief Information Officer.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Frank Bateman, the Department of Health and Human Services Chief Information Officer. Now, Frank, before break, we're talking a lot about the cloud. We're talking about your work with Amazon to get a FedRAMP authority to operate, the first one by an agency to do so. So give me a sense of what services are already in the cloud. What services are you looking to move into the cloud in the coming weeks, months, years?
First of all, the department has been exploring the cloud, particularly for public-facing activities. So, for instance, FDA's MedWatch Plus is in the cloud and is, in fact, hosted in the Amazon cloud. Virtual desktop in the office of the secretary. We have a pilot right now that has 500 users, and we're hosting that virtual desktop also in the Amazon cloud. I think that as we move forward, we're going to see opportunities for moving more and more to the cloud, particularly given the fiscal climate that we're in right now. It almost makes sense to be confident of what your operating expenses are going to be and not be forced to make the capital investment that comes from modernizing your data center every 2 or 3 years.
Let's talk about that VDI, because a lot of agencies are looking at that or actually doing it. What is that pilot about? When you talk about a VDI, for instance, one of the examples I like to put out there, somebody mentioned to me, is VDI on a stick, meaning kind of a thumb drive, and that's where everything lives. How are you guys going about the virtual desktop initiative?
In the office of the secretary, we have 10,000 users that we support. The pilot has 500 users in it. And the purpose of the pilot is really to understand those people who are going to be qualified to be virtual desktop users and how many of those 10,000 we're going to be able to migrate over to VDI. Why we love VDI? Well, first, we have to migrate from Windows XP to Windows 7 before Microsoft ends support for XP next April. Moving people to VDI means that we can simply move them virtually. We don't have to go out and change their machines. Some of the older machines will work even better with VDI than they do running an operating system right on them. But one of the things we really enjoy about VDI is it's going to help us mobilize our workforce. We're going to make it possible for people to use VDI on mobile devices, on personal devices, with no security risks.
All right, explain to me that one, because I think you just heard a big gasp from my audience. No security risks.
Well, when you're using VDI, you're using a virtual image. No data is actually transferred to the personal device. So you're simply looking at an image, and we can be confident that the data is remaining in the data center.
What's the plan for the pilot? How far into it are you? Do you expect to move this into an operational phase in the coming year?
Yes. So we've had the pilot going now for, I believe, about 6 weeks. Our assessment of the pilot is going to be complete by the end of August, and beginning in the fall, we're going to roll out from pilot to production for the appropriate folks within the Office of the Secretary. Again, at this point, until the pilot's completed, I don't know how many people that's going to be, and I don't know what sort of cost savings we're hoping to get. The pilot's going to help us do those economics.
Is there any thought about moving this to the entire HHS versus just certain people who are quote-unquote qualified?
As a large federated agency, the various parts of HHS have to make their own decisions about what's right for their business. But I see that the Office of the Secretary is like a small operating division. It is 10,000 users. So I'm hopeful that we can pilot things and use the Office of the Secretary as a showcase for things that work in much the same way that we all look to the White House and say, well, wait a second, they're letting their mail go onto mobile devices now, other than BlackBerries. If it's okay there, maybe it's okay for us as well.
One of the other things about moving to the cloud is the commodity IT. You talked about a lot of public facing. Are you looking at email? Are you looking at collaboration? Are you looking at some of the other kind of commonly functions that are maybe considered back office that are also moving to the cloud, as you see maybe other agencies?
Sure. So under your portfolio stat, in addition to the hire-retire system that I talked about, one of the other commitments we made last year was that we would move at least part of HHS to email as a service in the cloud. And we're well on the way to making that happen. We hope to put our RFP out for email as a service in the next month or two. And I'd like to say that it's really not email as a service, it's collaboration as a service. There is so much more tied up in the vendor offerings of putting email in the cloud that would really modernize the systems that we're using. You get things like video chat. You get things like instant messaging. You get office tools in the cloud. All of those things, they're what our users, our employees, have in their personal lives right now. And it's what they expect to have in their office. So I'm pretty excited about that.
And one of the things you said was at least some of HHS would move to the cloud email. Why only some and not all? Has some people already moved? Has some, you know, CDC or FDA already moved to the cloud?
No, actually, no operating divisions in HHS have yet moved. We're doing an assessment right now of what the costs and benefits are across the department. And as that comes in, we're going to make a decision about which parts of the department are going to migrate. The bottom line, though, is it's pretty rare in a very large, diverse organization like HHS that any single initiative benefits every corner of the department equally.
All right, good luck on that. I know you'll have a lot of vendors who are going to be interested in helping you out and bidding on that RFP, so you can blame me when you start getting all those calls from them.
Oh, trust me, we've been getting them already.
All right, well, good. We are actually almost out of time, but before I let you go, there's another thing you mentioned in your testimony before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee recently, three new IT steering committees. What are they? How are they working?
So what we created at HHS about a year ago was a domain governance structure. We have three domains, administrative and management systems, health and human services systems, and scientific research systems. And the idea of doing that was we could look across the department functionally and say, listen, we know that we have a system doing X in CDC, doing X in NIH, and doing X in FDA. Does it make sense for us to do one department-wide so that we build it once, buy it once, and get the benefits of having the scale purchasing that would come from buying it at the HHS level? That domain governance structure gives us the opportunity to look across the department at functions rather than within the silos of each operating division.
All right, sir. Well, there's so much more we could talk about, but unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Frank Bateman, the Department of Health and Human Services Chief Information Officer. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.